2.
It's true.
Thursday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. 651-989-5855 is the phone number.
Got an update, UFO update. First off, let's get you back up to speed. This comes back to a couple of weeks ago. Republican Florida Senator Marco Rubio said the upcoming report, which I believe is going to be out on the 25th, on unidentified aerial phenomenon the U.S. military has been witnessing and recording on tape will not be the last step in a serious investigation into the matter. He went on to say, men and women we have entrusted with the defense of our country are reporting encounters with unidentified aircraft with superior capabilities. We cannot allow the stigma of UFOs to keep us from seriously investigating this. The forthcoming report is one step in that process, but it will not be the last. It's interesting because there was a New York Times story that came out last week. There's been like a slow trickle of new information ahead of this congressional report on July 25th. And there was some coverage within just the UFO community around this subsequent New York Times report. And what they were saying was that the report that comes out on the 25th will basically say, and the article here that we have in front of us says the same thing, the U.S. intelligence officials have found no evidence that the aerial phenomenon witnessed by Navy pilots in recent years are alien spacecraft. What's fascinating about that, at least in my opinion, what's fascinating about that comment is, especially when you combine it with the next story we have in this, their rationale for not being able to say that is simply because they haven't seen it come from orbit.
Yeah.
So that to me is really, really fascinating just from the angle of, well, holy cow, what if they do end up seeing it come from orbit? They've seen it go up, and they've seen these craft go up to really high levels within our atmosphere, but they've never seen anything coming in off planet, which is really the only reason why they're not making that.
That's why they can't.
That statement.
They haven't seen it.
Right.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, but still, it's like, what if they do?
But they have apparently ruled out, at least to the best of their ability, this technology coming from Russia or China. You know, that's been coming out the last couple of days, that these UAPs and UFOs, they are not Russian technology, they are not Chinese technology. And this comment from, you know, Rubio here is, you know, if they did belong to a potential adversary of the United States, this sort of demonstrates why we need to investigate this and learn more about it. You know, if it was, that would be one heck of a technological leap and a huge strategic surprise. So we have to know what this stuff is.
In the meantime, there's a new revelation, and we've actually heard this, and it's now kind of making it to the mainstream, because I've heard this now for several months, but that these UAPs, these UFOs, have repeatedly took offline U.S. nuclear capabilities.
That's crazy. And this is coming from this Luis Elizondo, who is really the catalyst behind a lot of this stuff coming out, because he was kind of a whistleblower, basically, when he left the Department of Defense and started saying, look, guys, we're hearing all this stuff about UFOs and UAPs, and nobody knows what they are, and it's happening all the time, and nobody's saying anything about it.
He says, while some may deem the incidents to be something that is peaceful, there is data suggesting the UFOs have meddled with other countries' nuclear technology and actually turned them on, put them online. I think that there is certainly at this point enough data to demonstrate there is an interest in our nuclear technology and a potential to even interfere with nuclear technology, Elizondo said, noting that there's nothing surprising about the possible increased interest in U.S. capabilities related to this nuclear technology. And he's come straight out and said, it's like, look, you know, he knows a lot because of his time working with ATIP inside the government. He said several times now that, you know, if this report doesn't detail some of the other things I know, I may come out and say it myself. This particular item of note, though, is important because, to me, if we're going to get anything like really interesting in this report, because it is supposed to be about defense and whether or not these UAPs are a threat to our national interests, it's information like this that I would hope would be included within this report, sort of substantiating these claims that UFOs have been screwing around with some of our nuclear sites.
Yeah, and again, commenting on the upcoming report, the expert, which is Luis Elizondo, noted that it was definitively stated that these UAPs were not U.S., Russian, nor Chinese technology. What does that leave?
Yeah, I know.
Japan? Canada? Maybe they're Canadian.
I don't.
What a twist.
Canada could get away with it. Like nobody pays attention to Canada.
They're Trudeau's.
What if this whole time Canada has just had like the most robust and insane space
nobody
program?
Nobody would notice.
They're Trudeau-fos.
Trudeau-fos. Nobody pays attention to what Canada is. Nobody cares what Canada's doing.
Canada's not really. We're just up here making syrup.
Yeah. Not really. Maybe that's why they've had their border closed for so long.
That's right. They don't want anybody seeing their amazing UFO technology.
They're Trudeau-fos.
Yeah, they're Trudeau-fos.
It's interesting because this is really fascinating stuff. And the testimony from these credible witnesses and these pilots. I know we had a 60-minute special on it, but I personally, it may just be my interest in science fiction, so I fully admit that. But I do think that there is a level of interest I would think the public would have to get further coverage. And I know there's been like local outlets that have covered it, but I can't help but feel that there's a portion of the public that, like, yeah, I don't really want to know. Like, you know, when it's not explained, and it has been so ingrained in us for so many decades, especially, like we talked about this before, of you just kind of being a crackpot crazy person. Right. It's aliens if you ever go to suggest that.
Yeah, no,
the stigma.
There's a stigma. There's an absolute stigma around discussing UFOs and technology and aliens and all that stuff. And you do get, you know, you will quickly get labeled as a crazy person if you know, generally speaking, at least in the past, you know, if you carry on about this stuff for too long. But the fact of the matter is, Marco Rubio is right. There, at the end of the day, what we know is that these things are popping up out of somewhere, that they are able to demonstrate technological advancements that we can't explain and don't understand and haven't seen yet. So whatever it is, from just a defense and strategic perspective, you know, you want as robust an investigation as possible.
And DeVita.
That's all.
And DeVita's seen one.
DeVita's seen one, yeah.
All right, let's switch gears. Alpha News. Republican lawmakers urged Governor Tim Walz to send additional law enforcement resources to Minneapolis to stop the bleeding, but the governor scoffed at the simplistic proposal. Yes, said the mayor of Simpleton.
I mean, come on. If you're going to scoff at a proposal and call it simplistic, you better have a better idea, like chambered up and ready to go.
Yeah, well, apparently he is preparing a Safe Streets initiative, but has not released any details.
Oh, okay. Is this an announcement of an announcement?
No, there is no announcement of an announcement. This is more of a pre-announcement to the announcement that there might be an announcement.
Oh, okay. So we're taking it one step even further.
House Minority Leader Kurt Dowd said Minnesota this year is looking at another summer of violent crime. This was at a Tuesday press conference alongside other GOP legislators. Dowd said, "We know Minneapolis police are critically understaffed and the chief has requested new officers but encountered resistance from the city council. There's too much talking and finger pointing and not enough action. Efforts to reimagine public safety will do nothing in the short term to address, and we're going to get into that in a moment, the violence that is plaguing Minneapolis, particularly in low income and minority communities."
Disproportionate impact. That's what the lack of action is producing.
Yeah.
It's absolutely producing a disproportionate impact on low income and minority communities within the Twin Cities. And for that rationale alone, our friends on the left should be all up in arms about the lack of action to stop and stem the violent uptick in crime.
Representative Brian Johnson said the governors have called on the state patrol to respond to violent crime before, including Governor Arne Carlson in 95, Tim Pawlenty in 2003. But Walz and the House DFL-led negotiator on public safety funding quickly rebuffed the idea, calling it simplistic and non-helpful posturing.
But didn't bother to come up with a counterproposal.
No.
That's cool. That's good. Yeah. Just scoff at it, call it simplistic, even though it's worked in the past.
Yeah.
And it's worked in other areas. And anybody with half a brain knows one of the things we need immediately is more police, more law enforcement on the streets right now, yesterday, last week. But no interest from the DFL. They just scoff at it, call it simplistic, and move on with their day and cross their fingers and hope another 6-year-old doesn't get shot.
And we're going to keep saying it. You can do something today. And it's not activist groups, community groups, ex-gang members going in there and trying to appeal to the goodwill of the individuals that are keeping the streets shut down and George Floyd Square and the blocks around it under siege. No. After 3 days of rioting, in Minneapolis, the National Guard came in and got things under control. Community groups are failures at enforcing law enforcement.
You think? They're just sucking money out of the system.
Yeah.
That's all they're doing.
They're just getting paid.
They're getting paid a lot of money to do nothing. Paul Novotny, representative out of Elk River. Right now, we need to stop the bleeding. We literally need to stop the bleeding. He's absolutely right. We are in a crisis situation right now. This is not a time to talk about policy proposals and reimagining public safety and investments into new groups and creating all these new layers of bureaucracy and offices of this and managers of that with all of this money. This is not the time to do that. The time to right now, you need to stop the bleeding. You have an open wound in Minneapolis that is festering, and all you're doing is looking at it.
There is an editorial came out in the Star Tribune yesterday. The city wants to gentrify George Floyd Square. The same old forces that shut out working class people in favor of privatization are trying to get their way. It was penned by two city council candidates and a candidate for the Minneapolis Board of Estimates and Taxation. I've read through this thing twice. It's pure and utter garbage. There is no accounting for the lawlessness that's going on, the homicides that are happening, the drug abuse, right? What this is doing for the city of Minneapolis as a whole. As a matter of fact, what's really interesting about this particular piece, right, is it's a really lengthy piece, but most of it just tries to criticize and vilify privatization and the government and all this. You get towards the end of it, and this is what these activists and candidates had to say. For the past year, George Floyd Square has been a sacred space, a place for healing, and a place for building community run by community members. What's the future of George Floyd Square under corporate leadership?
No.
Close your eyes and you can see it. Condos, upscale restaurants, and chain stores generating wealth.
That sounds nice.
For the select few, while community members are priced out, public services and schools remain underfunded, and racial inequality intensifies. Can you imagine it there? Because we've all seen it before. Yeah, you know what? Your alternative is trash, lawlessness, drug abuse, freedom and liberty trampling, and homicides.
I mean, that seems to be the options in front of us right now.
And
you want to keep the status quo? You want to keep the status quo over apartments and coffee shops and restaurants? Apartments and coffee shops and restaurants sound lovely.
And there's an admission in here that's astonishing. The very last sentence. The future of George Floyd Square is a crucial battle in the fight between corporate forces and the people. Which side are you on? I thought it was about justice. It's a crucial battle between corporate forces and the people. I thought
who runs corporate forces?
No justice, no peace.
See, people run. Corporations are nothing but groups of people.
Yeah,
that's all they are.
It's insanity.
Like literal groups of people, not what the city of Minneapolis calls groups of people, which are gangs.
There is a power in George Floyd Square. The city knows this, which is exactly why the city doesn't want the community to have it. It will use the killing of a black man by police to co-opt the subsequent work of community members in order to pave the way to gentrification. Meanwhile, you're using the death of George Floyd to get more power and money.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully get elected to office.
Mm-hmm. And you want to, and seriously, like who could see and witness what's going on in and around 38th in Chicago and be like, yeah, we need to keep this. What?
Yeah.
We can't let a coffee shop open up in here. That'd be bad. We need to keep this as it is. It's disgusting and dangerous.
Yeah. And racist.
And kind of racist.
yeah. And deadly.
And kind of racist and kind of deadly. Yeah.
So we're going to dive into this Minnesota Reformer piece, and there's a lot to get into. Facing increasing political pressure on all sides in the face of rising violent crime and activists demanding the dismantling of their police departments, Minneapolis and some other cities are increasingly turning to private community groups to keep the peace and provide political cover in perilous times.
The details of what's been happening with this money and all these groups is absolutely mind-boggling. You're not going to want to miss this. Stick around.
Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM, along with Sam Katie Pavlich will be joining us a little over an hour from now from Fox News. The Biden administration DOJ going after harshly unprecedented assault against American news organizations. We'll get into that with Katie coming up next hour.
Yeah, there's a story going around about how, you know, the Trump administration was trying to get email records from somebody CNN. And you start seeing that story pop up, you know, re-pop up again and again right now. It's because they don't want you to see the story about Biden doubling down on everything Trump did when it came to surveillance of journalists. I mean, it's Obama's third term. So why should anybody be surprised?
With these city council members, and I don't know how Arredondo fits into this whole thing. Because I can't imagine, as, you know, being the Minneapolis police chief, you know, he didn't get to that position by being a dummy. He's a smart guy. He must just be, I don't know, he must be put into a corner in this whole thing, because with the activist leadership that we have, I think it's partly due to the fact that they're true believers in the defund movement. They have their own sort of electoral shielding. They know they're not going to get voted out of office, and so they can try to placate the community by going this route. But, you know, here you have this leadership using activist / community groups as law enforcement officers, right, to try to propel their narrative of defund the police. In the meantime, these community activist groups are getting paid and making money in the process without having to provide any tangible results.
Yeah, this is what happens when you have generations of sort of single party rule. Right. If there's no threat of electoral accountability hanging over some of these decisions that we've made, we never would have gotten this bad.
Yeah.
If there was a genuine threat of electoral accountability from the people of Minneapolis, that they might lose their seats to somebody with a different philosophy, with a different worldview, with a different, you know, political persuasion, then they would have been a lot more moderate in a lot of their decisions. But without that threat, they can do whatever the hell they want. When Lisa Bender becomes the most powerful politician in the city of Minneapolis with only 5,000-ish people voting for her, This is the type of crap that you end up with.
The Agape Movement, a group of ex-gang members who arose out of the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd, first put up barricades around the intersection where Floyd was killed by Minneapolis police so activists could hold the space.
Now, keep that in mind.
Right.
The Agape Movement that the city paid money to help reopen, they first put up the barricades around 38th in Chicago.
Then they were hired by the city to help with security in the square, complete with a house converted into an office north of Cup Foods. Now, last week, however, Agape's mission took a turn when it was paid by the city to help keep the square calm as city workers took down the barricades.
Paid by the city to help keep calm. And Agape went and told everybody in the media that the city, this isn't the city, this is us, this is a community movement. And everybody in the media last week, when they first decided to, you know, reopen, the first attempt to reopen 38th in Chicago, dutifully reported that the mayor and the city council are not involved in this at all.
They removed plants around the fist sculpture in the intersection and erected roundabout signs in their place, all in an effort to reopen the square to car and bus traffic. Agape's role in the botched reopening irritated activists and protesters who have kept the four-block area around the intersection closed for more than a year. And I want to, but before we continue to get further into this, I do want to say, look, if they're ex-gang members, right, great. That's great. And I bet that you can provide a very valuable resource within the community on the ground. But in no way, shape, or form should you be, or are you qualified to be security or handling law enforcement in the city of Minneapolis, right? That's great. If you're an ex-gang member and you're reformed and you're no longer involved in that type of lifestyle, then I bet you have a lot of really good insight to offer. But that doesn't mean that you should be getting paid as security or trying to enforce the law from the city. I mean, this isn't that difficult to understand.
No, this isn't. Steve Floyd, no relation to George Floyd, is one of the Agape co-founders. He's quoted in the story saying that the money was diverted from the police and given to them to, quote, give young men jobs. He said they scream and holler, defund the police, abolish the police. Once the city diverted money to groups like Agape to help with public safety, people accused Agape of working with the police. And he was like, you don't get ex-gang members working for the police. So basically, the city has ceded law enforcement responsibilities, at least in the area of 38th and Chicago, to this group of ex-gang members who are... And for a while, we're working to help keep George Floyd Square closed and then help the city reopen it. And certain members would remove barricades, and then other members would put the barricades back. You're talking over $300,000 earmarked for this group that doesn't really seem to have any idea of what they're doing, or, you know, even unity within their own ranks as to whether or not they're going to help reopen or help reclose 38th in Chicago.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover in the article.
It's a great piece. I highly encourage you to go read it. I tweeted out a link to it last night using the hashtag TCNT.
We'll dive into the majority of it coming up. Before we go to break, I want to zero in on something, though, because this floored me. Minneapolis City Council member Jeremiah Ellison, he said some of the private groups have risen to the occasion, but he has also seen their credibility take hits. And I'm going to have to calm myself when I read this quote from him, because I couldn't, like, I was infuriated when I read it this morning. I think it's well intended, but what is the efficacy of the strategy? How can we prevent putting these groups in a position to blow up their credibility, he asked. Then he said, anytime you act, you're going to create a few critics. But these groups thrive when they're trusted. What, you moron. What about your law enforcement officers that are trained to do this job? Why is it you can't make the same statement for the men, the brave men and women who have decided to serve and protect the city? Anytime you act, you're going to create a few critics. But these groups thrive when they're trusted. Well, no blank.
Yeah.
They thrive when they're trusted.
Right. Why is Jeremiah Ellison making it a priority to protect the credibility of these groups that have no accountability, no transparency whatsoever? You don't know what they're doing. You don't know who they're working for. You're just giving them money.
If these groups begin to be seen as quasi-law enforcement, we're going to find more people fearing or resent them.
Yeah.
That might eventually compromise their ability to do their jobs well. What in the hell do you think you've done to law enforcement?
To actual law enforcement. Like, that's exactly what you've done.
That's what they did!
That's what they've been doing for years.
I couldn't believe it, sowing
distrust of law enforcement and making them the bad guys in every situation.
No, but we'll go ahead and we'll grant ex-gang members with no training whatsoever in law enforcement, we'll give them all the leeway in the world, even if they get a few critics.
Yeah.
But heaven forbid our highly qualified and trained law enforcement officers who chose to serve this city be given the same type of privilege.
We're not nearly done with this piece from the Minnesota Reformer. There's a lot more to get to, so stick around. We will be joined by Katie Pavlich from Fox News. Very much looking forward to catching up with her. In the meantime, phone lines are open, 651-989-5855. We're digging into this Minnesota Reformer piece about these unproven community groups like Agape that have been collecting all sorts of cash from the cities around the area to help provide public safety. It's crazy because, you know, you would think that there would be an organization already in existence that they could funnel money to that would help do that.
Facing increasing political pressure on all sides in the face of rising violent crime, the Reformer article says in the start, an activist demanding dismantling of their police departments, Minneapolis and some other cities are increasingly turning to private community groups to keep the peace and provide political cover in perilous times. Agape's contract calls for it to work under the city's direction, including the police department. The groups are not eager to disclose financial ties to city governments.
All that transparency.
Brooklyn Center spent $140,000 to contract with six community groups to help handle protests after the April 11th police shooting of Dante Wright. Acting city manager Reggie Edwards says one of the six groups was the Minnesota Freedom Fighters.
Oh. Last month, Freedom Fighters commander Jameel Jackson told the Reformer that his group was volunteering at the protests. And the Reformer then went and obtained the Freedom Fighters' $55,000 contract for 9 days of work, with its staff paid $30 an hour to provide intervention and mediation for agitated protesters, maintain a barrier between police and protesters, assist with crowd control, help with healing spaces, protect media and official staff, and deliver information from police to protesters. I'm curious. How do you think they did?
Well, let's
do you think they did a good job?
Let's start making the list of questions, right? Was there any follow-up? Was there any accountability? Was there any documentation? Are there any examples of this work actually being done?
No.
Or was $55,000 just given to the Freedom Fighters, $30 an hour to individuals who, I'm going to guess, I don't have any evidence of this, but my guess, based on how things went, basically they just paid them to be a part of all the protesting.
Yes! Yeah.
Not hard to figure out.
They were literally paid protesters with your money, with your tax dollars. $140,000 was spent from Brooklyn Center for six groups, and we still had riots, we still had vandalism, we still had looting, we still had confrontations between protesters and police, we still had media complaining that they were affected by tear gas and that they were involved in altercations with the police. We paid $140,000 for these community groups, and they didn't do squat. They didn't do a damn thing. I guarantee you, and I'm like, just like you, John, I don't have any evidence to suggest it, but I would bet any amount of money that these members of these groups, they were right there with all the protesters, but they were empowered because they were being paid to be there. That was their job to be there.
So we're going to get into the agape money here, but look at the dynamics that are playing out here now, because... And I don't want the city to cave to the list of 24 demands that the Marsha Howards and whomevers over at George Floyd Square keep saying, right? That editorial that I mentioned earlier about the gentrification of George Floyd Square, they mentioned the 24 demands too, right? But think about this for a moment. A part of those 24 demands is a lot of money to be doled out to these groups. So here you have the city doling out hundreds of thousands of dollars to other activists and community groups to try to enact enforcement with zero training. And what does that go and tell the individuals that are continuing to be the ones that keep the area shut down, that is asking for other money? I mean, look at the dynamic and the disaster in which they've created here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they
don't care.
They just piled on conflict after conflict. They're pitting the community against each other now.
Yeah. And they don't care. So we talked about the Freedom Fighters group that was paid by Brooklyn Center, who, you know, lied to the Reformer and said that they were volunteering. Steve Floyd, one of the Agape co-founder, last week told a Reformer reporter that Agape didn't have a contract with the city, which the Dina Winter writes, which was not true.
Just flat out was not true.
Yeah, good job, Dina Winter. I mean, really, good job. I know I've praised her work on the show before, but this is a fantastic piece, and this is really good work by her. So Steve Floyd lied to the Reformer, saying that they didn't have a contract with the city. City officials later released Agape's consulting contract, showing that Agape could be paid up to $359,000 to provide, quote, a number of community building, health and safety services associated with reopening of 38th and Chicago.
Well, bang up job they've done so far.
So far.
The contract requires Agape's outreach workers, who are paid up to $40 per hour.
We're going to lose Sam to this.
Wait a second, what?
To be trained.
Are they looking for members?
$40 an hour to be trained. Who's training them? The city officials say the workers have been instructed in de-escalation, conflict resolution, and group violence intervention. Who's instructing them? Who is training them?
Well, that's a good question. And Dina Winter asked that question, but the city declined to make anyone available for an interview on the training provided. Transparency.
It's also not clear how much vetting the workers are actually receiving.
Akeem Kubi is an Agape member who spoke at that press conference last week during the first botched reopening of 38th in Chicago. He later told two reporters that day that he will likely kill people someday. Let me say that again. He told reporters later in the day that he will likely kill people someday.
Hey, Drew, can you say it one more time for the people in the back?
He will told reporters later in the day that he will likely kill people someday. This is Akeem Kubi, an Agape member who spoke at the press conference. He also questioned why white reporters don't pay black people in the square $5,000 for their stories and photos. And he warned reporters that they weren't safe in the square because, quote, hurt people hurt people.
I just want to address that call. Was it Brian yesterday, right?
Brian from South Minneapolis.
Yeah, I just, again, this goes back to that. If you missed it yesterday, listen to it in the 8 o'clock hour of Brian, who called up, listening to the show.
Worst morning show in Minnesota.
But we had a great conversation with him, and he had a completely different perspective, and I think it's mostly due to the fact that he wasn't paying close enough attention and just hasn't seen what really is going on. This is what's really going on. Is this one of the individuals that was paid $40 an hour in the training of de-escalation, conflict resolution, and group violence intervention, saying he's likely going to kill people one day, and that white reporters should be paying black people $5,000 for their stories, and that reporters weren't safe because hurt people hurt people?
Yeah. And we've heard multiple stories of reporters and journalists that have attempted to do their job around 38th in Chicago and have been threatened by security. We know that Agape is being paid to provide security. We know that Akeem has threatened to or said that he's going to kill people and has threatened reporters. So, you know, what's going on here? Is the city paying a group of people to provide security who are then threatening members of the media who are just trying to do their job? Is the city helping to squash First Amendment rights of members of the media? Because that's what it's, you know, you piece this all together and it really starts to feel like that's what's happening.
Akeem Kubi, the Agape member we've been talking about, also said he wanted the intersection reopened to show that it should be closed.
Oh, good. What a great use of money. You know, what's the old joke? Government will pay you to dig a hole and then pay you to fill it back up?
Right.
They're paying people to open the intersection and then close it back up. That's what they're literally doing. This is job creation from government 101.
And I want to, and Drew, I want to add on to Dina Winter here, just say something, right? And again, hat tip to her, I'm with you, and good on her for being brave enough to cover this, because I don't think the rest of our local media, the Star Tribune and alike, are brave enough to do this. They're not. They simply aren't. They're not brave enough to go and
it does take bravery.
Right. It does to put it out there, to put the truth out there, because there's going to be a lot of irrational people that will be listening to this right now, making all kinds of accusations. But the truth of the matter is, these are the facts on the ground of the individuals who currently are supposedly in charge of security and the reopening of 38th in Chicago.
So QB, as John mentioned, said he wanted the intersection reopened to show that it could be closed. His quote here, and maybe you can help translate this for me. Us barricading this block kept the men of this block safe because there's gang activity going on over here. To put up these barricades and push them to the side, it don't help us, to which Dina added, which seems to contradict Agape's mission to remove the barricades. The mayor's office and Sasha Cotton, the head of the Office of Violence Prevention, didn't respond to requests for comments. Speaking of bravery and a lack thereof.
And I don't know if Dina in the Reformer meant this as a joke, but it just made me laugh because she actually got into the wording of agape. Because agape is a Greco-Christian term referring to unconditional love, right? From where the Quentin Watham Acama was sitting last week in George Floyd Square, there was no love being shown by agape workers as they tried to keep the intersection open.
Yeah, this Quentin is a St. Paul elementary educator who went to the square on the botched reopening day to see what was happening and said he witnessed an agape worker hurling homophobic insults at activists.
Again, this is the same $40 an hour paid agape workers
police are bad.
They've been trained in de-escalation, conflict resolution, and group violence intervention. And again, let's go back to Jeremiah Ellison's comment really quick. How can we prevent these groups from being in a position to blow up their credibility? Anytime you act, you're going to create a few critics, but these groups thrive when they're trusted. Jeremiah Ellison, are you not seeing what is happening with the very individuals you're talking about?
I know.
It's lunacy.
You can't fund police appropriately. You can't hire police appropriately. But you can throw $359,000 at a group of people who will just completely ignore the mission that you've tasked them with, reopening the intersection, and then they'll help close it back up afterwards, who talk about how they're going to kill people, who threaten reporters, who hurl homophobic insults at activists. This is where your money's going. $359,000 to this group.
The Freedom Fighters have, this is Brooklyn Center, have also not been free of police scrutiny. Several members of the normally heavily armed Freedom Fighters were arrested Saturday night at the Uptown protests over another police shooting of a black man, Winston Smith. The group expressed outrage on its Instagram page, saying the city claims it wants to reimagine public safety, but the events of last night indicate that they want business as usual. So this is the Freedom Fire group that was also given tens of thousands of dollars in Brooklyn Center to provide security, mm-hmm. whose members are armed and got arrested during the Uptown protest the other night. Now, did they get any de-escalation training? When asked what happened on Monday, Jackson of the Freedom Fighters said that he was there when it happened. I still don't know, he said. He and his team needed more time to decide how to respond.
I mean, think about how empowered these individuals must feel who are part of these groups, part of the Freedom Fighters or part of Agape or part of, like, when you realize how much money is coming in from the city, there's got to be a sense of invincibility there, right? I mean, it's like I'm being paid by the city now.
I'm a security.
I can do what I want. I can say what I want. I can go where I want. I mean, who's, you know, is there any threat of being fired by the city if you don't do your job, right? These Freedom Fighters people clearly didn't hold up their end of the contract, it seems, when you look at what happened around Brooklyn Center after Dante Wright was killed.
Well, and it makes me wonder now, and again, I'm just throwing out questions, but it makes me wonder now with these videos that we've seen. So you had the Florida reporter that came in that tried to go into the autonomous zone, and there were the two individuals who came up and said, you can't come in here, you're going to be in trouble. We had that same reporter actually got into 38th in Chicago, was given a tour by one of the members of the church right nearby, and then there was another individual that came up and told them that reporter had to leave. Mm-hmm. What are the odds that those are the individuals working with Agape? That's their idea of security?
Wouldn't it be nice to know?
Yeah, that security for Agape and these organizations is actually keeping people out of the area and keeping reporters away from the area.
That would be good information to have, but nobody knows.
It would explain why they feel so emboldened. Right, Agape knows, but Drew doesn't. Wouldn't? And again, I don't know this. I'm just throwing out questions. Wouldn't that explain why those individuals feel so emboldened to be able to go up and say you have to leave if they've been receiving funding from mm-hmm. the city for security?
Yep. It's crazy.
$1 million went to other groups. The city of Minneapolis also turned to private groups to help try to keep the peace during and after the trials of Derek Chauvin and his three former police officers charged in Floyd's death. The city awarded $1 million in contracts to seven community organizations to provide positive outreach and support this year.
What the hell does that even mean?
No idea.
I mean, are there any metrics attached to this money? Are there any concrete expectations that have to be fulfilled? Usually when you award a contract, you know, both parties have terms that they have to live up to in that contract. What are the terms that were expected of these groups, and did they live up to them? Because from where I'm sitting, there was still plenty of unrest.
So far, the operation of George Floyd Square doesn't seem to be working after the according to Tina Winter and their Minnesota Reformer. That is an understatement. After the initial failed attempt to reopen the square Thursday, Agape workers again removed the barriers in another early morning operation Tuesday, and the protesters put them back. There was an individual who actually came out when they tried to open it last week, and he came, one of the points of the story was he came running out in his bathrobe. So still in his bathrobe as the day wore on last week, this individual said most of the neighborhood supports keeping the square barricaded off. He said city officials are using rising crime as an excuse to reopen the intersection. I believe the violence is going to happen regardless. Until they start the surgical process of actually providing social programs for these underprivileged areas, he said, that's what's going to stop the violence, not opening up the streets. Doesn't that sound an awful lot like how Brian sounded yesterday?
Yeah. It's just people that, you know, aren't really paying attention to what's going on. We got some phone calls coming in, 651-989-5855. Would really love to hear your feedback and hear your thoughts on all of this stuff. This is insane stuff that's happening in your city, in Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities. And it's not just Minneapolis, not just Brooklyn Center. This is happening in St. Paul. This is happening elsewhere. This story focuses on those two main ones at first.
Those who are on hold, stay on hold. We're going to get to your phone calls next, especially this one call we have on hold, because they're going to make a really, really interesting point, which I think encapsulates sort of the larger mentality of the organizations and what's driving a lot of these failed efforts. It's all coming up on Justice and Drew.